SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Back after the Saturday night drive and Sunday trip. That brings us back from the Derby fortnight. And there is so much to have to unpack, and I don't mean just the car, after a Derby that is going to take its place in the sports annals and in the record of this particular event with I earlier this morning tied into the other famous and highly controversial derbies. None, though, that had the result that this did. A disqualification for the incident at the top of the stretch, off the turn. And a conflagration that it will go on, much like the Breeders' Cup Classic, where for the next, I don't know, my memory might not be that clear on it, but it sure felt like 2 weeks plus. This being the Derby, it'll be bigger, and it'll last longer, and legal action being threatened and suggested by Gary West as recently as this morning, and they'll file their appeal. There's so many views of this that it's hard to even fairly assess what should have happened, what could have happened, what the stewards did. There, you know, there's internal mechanisms here that are coming under scrutiny. The statement from the stewards, the refusal to take questions, the fact that an inquiry didn't go up immediately, that it took a very clever jockey's objection by Flavian Pratt. That was the only one we knew about immediately. John Court had also claimed foul, and that came out later. But the subsequent views of the race, the overhead, the side view, the pan shot, you can tell what happens. It's not hard to see and interpret what happened as Luis Saez and Maximum Security came off the turn and fans out. People are, oh, he was hurting. Oh, he did it intentionally. Oh, the wall of noise was my first immediate thought. You know, horses are confronted as they come off that turn. The lights glaring on the wet track and so on and so forth, whatever. Also looked like his hind end kind of came out first from under him, and you can see Saez with his left hand on the left rein doing all he can to straighten. And what hasn't been discussed much is as he straightened, he saw that Johnny V and Code of Honor were sneaking up the rail. And very quickly, Saez, you know, dove to confront Code of Honor. The things that were going on behind Maximum Security, the more everybody watches, the more complex this gets. Because War of Will, who you have to say immediately, first and foremost, what a job by Mark Cassie writing the ship after the Louisiana Derby and under real scrutiny and critique. Watch the early running and look at the handful of horse that Tyler Gaffney-Ohn has. There might have been a very interesting turn of events had on the backstretch. There was a point where War of Will wanted to sneak up inside of Maximum Security. That would have been very interesting had that happened. But War of Will absolutely was ready to run. A tremendous job by Cassie on that front. Obviously a tremendous performance from the disqualified winner, from the official winner, Flavian Pratt, with a great ride on Country House, who obviously loved the going. There were so many oddities about the way that race unfolded on a wet track. There's questions about why the track had to be that wet, because unfortunately a fateful decision on that front to harrow the track, which it seemed like maybe the rain was holding off. And in fact, I talked to Mike Trombetta yesterday, and Mike said at the barn they were watching the radar, and he saw that they were opening the track and that the harrows were going around, and that was a decision that only made a difficult surface, you know, that much more sloppy and muddy. Would have obviously, I mean, if you have it to do over again, keep it sealed and keep floating it and get as much water off the surface as possible. But I mean, frankly, everybody, you know, got around tremendous work in the irons by, you know, those that did come together. I mean, Gaffney-Ohn, War of Will, and John Court, Long Range Toddy. War of Will had given a hip check to Long Range Toddy before Maximum Security drifts out. Right at the 2-minute mark, if you watch the 5-minute NBC race video. So it absolutely gives him a solid bump. And the question that everybody can ask is a standard steward question. And in Kentucky, that's a pretty standard DQ. And what's unusual about this, as you've heard from quite a few Derby veteran trainers, the Derby's fairly notorious for, you know, having a high degree of contact and a race that's notoriously roughly run. And there's no doubt that an incident like that that happens in the first turn probably goes completely unaddressed. Where it happened there, in full view and easily discernible, even on the pan, it makes it very difficult, frankly, for the stewards not to disqualify. And I know it's opened up a debate about the international standards. I really don't care about the international standards right now. That's about as distant and unimportant in this context. Some people, I've already talked to some people, and they said, what did I think? Well, you know that notoriously on my end, I accept steward calls, and it just does not, to me, I invariably understand them, and you know, even if they're questionable, it's an element that contributes to the game, and in the scheme of your life as a horse player, you hope that you come out even slightly ahead when it comes to it. I got taken down for $24,000 at Del Mar in a pick six. It was a 50-50 call, and what are you going to do? It to me, this one is just so difficult, because even if it's a clear case that the stewards have little recourse than to disqualify Maximum Security, it doesn't necessarily make it a good call. If you understand, the fact that it's the right call doesn't make it a good call per se. This was the best horse, and that always makes it less than satisfying when you have the horse that was best taken down. And everybody's certainly happy for Mrs. Shields and the partners involved in the Roth family with Ellen J. Foxwoods and the partners in Country House and Flavian Pratt, who rode a tremendous race, and Bill Mott. But at the same time, you feel bad for Bill Mott, that as much work and has gone into his Hall of Fame career, that if this is his only Derby win that he had to defend, being in the position to be declared the winner. So it basically, over the hours, I drove away last on Saturday night and even all day yesterday, I just felt there's a deflating aspect to this, that we look so forward to it, and it's not the way you want our biggest race of the year decided. So, but we deal with it. We do deal with it the other 363 days. I say 363 because, 363 plus Derby Day is 364, and we don't race on Christmas. Beyond that, we have so much to look forward to, and that includes a conversation with Tom Amos. You want to talk about a tremendous effort by a horseman. Amos reorganizing and putting Serengeti Empress into position to compete in the Oaks, and then threw it down and could not be caught. Unbelievable. Looking forward to talking to Amos. We'll talk to Johnny D, of course, at the top of the hour. Brett Calhoun, he'll give his view. By my standards, bad start. Never really involved in the Derby, but it was still a great day for Chester Thomas and his family and friends, because earlier, absolutely brilliant effort by Mr. Money in the Pathé Mile, and he's going to try the Preakness. We'll talk to Brett about that. We'll talk about the Pathé Mile, talk about the Derby with him as well. Rusty Arnold, who on Friday sent out Concrete Rose for the Bromigans and Ashbrook. What a win for them. Upsetting Newspaper of Record. We'll talk to Rusty. We'll debate. We'll let jockeys debate. Rich Migliori and Tony Black in Hour 3. We'll give them opportunity to give their views. Mig came to the head of the stretch on Wheel Away, 3 abreast, so he knows that feeling. Tony came from off the pace in his Derby rides. But we'll let them discuss it. Dave Grenig of the Racing Form, who was abreast of Luis Saez as they waited for a decision. And frankly, when it went past 5 minutes, you knew, 6 minutes, you knew he was coming down. At least I did. I said it's already too long. We've made Andy Beyer wait too long as well. And Andy traditionally is our first post-Derby guest. Most years we talk about the performance and we talk about the figure and all the things that go with a Derby winner and Derby day. In this case, we can still do that, Andy, obviously, but there's more moving parts to this Derby than most. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Steve. I mean, it's one of these rare times that I regret that I've retired from my newspaper column because this could fill a week's worth of copy. I mean, it's really an interesting issue. But you just said something that was, you know, which is very relevant, and that was if this had happened on the first turn, I mean, nobody would have paid much attention, and so certainly, you know, nobody would have claimed foul. The fact is that there are infractions committed, by the book, if you ever go by the book, all the time in horse racing. And stewards always kind of make judgments of whether it's relevant. So the idea that we've been hearing after the Derby, well, it was a foul, and it's a foul. And whether it's the Kentucky Derby or a $10,000 claimer, you've got to enforce the rules. That's nonsense. Stewards use their judgment. I mean, it's often questioned. Remember when Byron racked up the field coming out of the starting gate in the Breeders' Cup, and it was as gross a foul as you ever seen. His number stayed up because it said, "Well, it happened at the." At the start, so we're not gonna take them down. So you really have to look at the specifics of the Derby, and how this incident affected the race. And I've watched this race a lot of times, and I, I have a fairly strong opinion. What happened on the final turn? Maximum Security, as we all saw, came out two paths, and he interfered with War of Will. And when I'm watching race, any race, and making my trip notes, I try to judge how much trouble a horse actually had, how many lengths it cost him. I would say War of Will steadied, and it cost him a length. And it wasn't like some dramatic case where he took up and got pulled up five lengths and was eliminated. It cost him a length. It was definitely a foul. It impacted him, but he clearly regrouped, and quickly regrouped. There's a quarter of a mile left in the race. I mean, he's now outside of Maximum Security. He's got a relatively clear path for a mile and a quarter, for a quarter of a mile to the wire. He regains his momentum. He draws within a length of the leader. He's repulsed in the final 16th of a mile. He's out of gas, and several horses, fly past him in the final yards while the jockey is pumping on him. So, in my estimation, if there had been no trouble on the turn, maybe War of Will would have finished fifth instead of eighth. But this race, this incident did not cost him the race by any means, and the other two horses who were involved there, I mean, they got beat so far that they were in the process of collapsing when the trouble occurred. So I don't think that Maximum Security's offense cost anybody significantly in the race. And, if he had interfered with Country House, and Country House had, then wound up losing by less than two lengths, as he did, you know, that would be a clear, you know, that would be a clear circumstance for a disqualification that would probably should take the stewards about 2 minutes. But I don't see the justice of disqualifying him and awarding the Derby to Country House, who avoided the trouble, no matter what, you know, the Country House team kind of says. I mean, he was in the clear, you know, four wide, you know, pretty good trip, you know, by the standards of a 19-horse Derby. He got beat fair and square. He was second best. I mean, to award him, you know, the Derby, you know, what merit is being served? You know, what justice is being served by doing that? You're taking millions of dollars away from people who bet on the right horse. You know, you're rewarding people and who had the non-best horse. I don't get it.
Well, and that's I think where the entire maximum security support side of things feels, and you bring up who was affected and when. There's a 5-minute NBC Sports video, and at the 2-minute mark, when in fact Worf will, before maximum security starts to drift, he gives a good solid hip check to Long Range Toddy. And then, simultaneously as Saez is beginning to go into a drift mode, Bodie Express is squeezed. He gets squeezed by Toddy and Country House, and he backs out of it. I mean, he was unaffected, frankly, before this happened, and then he starts to back out, and it is pretty evident, and you know, the overhead side view that NBC shows, the more you watch that, the less egregious the incident is. I mean, the biggest issue here was how much horse that you could see earlier than that Gaffleone was dealing with, and he wanted to get out. I understand it, but he also forces the issue, and we're all just. Everybody's lucky that the riders do such a great job, and you can see the tangling a little bit of the front legs of War of Will with the back of Maximum Security. But I the people that say, Andy, that oh, if it's a nickel claimer on Wednesday, it comes down. Maybe, maybe not. It's to me the no brainer.
Well, it doesn't because
let
me interrupt. I mean, yeah. It doesn't be the stewards didn't put up the inquiry sign.
Right.
Country House claimed foul only to call, only to get the stewards to look at it. That's not going to happen in a five claim.
That's true. That's true.
You know, so I just don't think this. I just don't think the horse should have come down. I wonder if I've heard a lot of people kind of raise the question of whether the personalities involved, played a role. People say, well, if Mott had won or if Baffert had won, would they have done the same thing? I don't have an opinion on that. I mean, I'm just not sure, how the Kentucky establishment kind of views all of the players. Do you hear people saying that could be a factor?
There is. There's some of that, and it's funny because I had to go on Sirius on one of the Mad Dog channels right at 7:30 before any of the ink had dried, and you kind of give a gut reaction, and I did bring that out. I said there's going to be conspiracy theorists that this is. you know, this is an undesirable winner. And that's why this is so just so unsatisfying, that you have to, you know, you have to also explain this, Andy, to a broader lay public that, you know, that doesn't watch, you know, they only might watch Triple Crown and some Breeders' Cup races. Somebody might, Andy, by the way, somebody might want to explain some of this to Sally Jenkins, who was wild-eyed in the post today.
I think the attempt, you know, I can understand the attempt of columnists to look at all the Santa Anita fatalities and the problems of horse racing, and try to lump it all together, tie it up with a bow to say, horse racing is doomed. I mean, this really had nothing, you know, had nothing to do with the issues raised at Santa Anita. I mean, this is really a question of enforcement of the rules and
technical
some other things.
Speaking of which, from a performance standard, a 101 figure for Maxim Security, giving him three straight triple-digit buyers. Your thoughts otherwise? Let's neutralize, you know, what went on, and obviously it was run on a racetrack that it was difficult, but we're getting more. You know, this has become a regular, the standard, frankly, these wet tracks for Derby. What was your thoughts overall on the race?
Well, just a couple notes on the figures. One, even though I dislike this horse from the betting standpoint, he did have the top two buyer speed figures, so we will take a bow for that. And I thought the figure, despite all the rain at Churchill Downs, the making the figures for the day was just totally straightforward. I mean, the track changed with the rain, but there were two distinct track variants, and one of them applied to races 12, 13, and 14 consistently. So the figure of 101 was solid as a rock. I thought Maxim Security ran well. When the closers came at him, he went into another drive. I thought a commendable performance. But, you know, we see so many Jason Service horses, do implausible things on the racetrack that, you know, let's face it, there's a cynical view of his horse's performances, no matter what they do.
That's fair. How'd you make out over the weekend in total? What else were you impressed with?
If I may give the Daily Racing Form a plug, the DRF clocker reports for this weekend were just stupendous. I mean, you could not have gotten better information if you were paying $10,000 to kind of a wise guy insider. And so with that help, I was in position to make a real nice pick four score in the Derby, but unfortunately, I did not consider Country House.
Now, there were some performances and some prices that really made particularly Saturday fun, and the 8-1 on, how about the 8-1 on Digital Age?
Yep. I had sort of gone to the Trackus data for him, and his race at Tampa Bay the time before, he'd run his final quarter in 22.7 seconds. Like, that's major league stakes horse acceleration. So, I mean, he, You know, and of course, Chad Brand does pretty well with turf horses too. So, you know, that was certainly logical.
Well, and both those efforts were terrific. Bricks and Mortar, who's really fun to watch, he looks, you know, dangerous at whatever distance you Chad wants to try him. Two trips to the winner's circle for Seth Klarman, and we'll get to that too, and everything else. Mitoli rated like a champ and didn't need the lead, and he looks like a Met Mile player now. Yesterday, I talked to Scott Blasi, and they're looking right at the Met Mile, and that's going to be good. So we're you know, beyond the DQ, we don't want to forget all the
right.
all
right.
the things
and,
that
and,
went
and
on.
The day before, I mean, McKenzie got a figure of 109. Might have even been a little higher. I mean, he's really you know, he's shown so much promise in his career. I think he's really taken that big step forward, that he's going to be like one of the top, you know, he could be the top horse in the country.
Well, yeah, McKenzie too, a terrific effort. So overall, I thought, you know, up until that 20-plus minute adjudication.
Everything else happened this weekend will be quickly forgotten. We're going to be talking about this DQ for a long time.
A long time. Well, meanwhile, hi-ho, Pimlico, and we'll look to Preakness. And Andy, as always, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, Steve.
Andy Beyer. We're going to stay right here, and Dave Grenig listening in, and Dave positioned what had to be Dave, in your career, standing there with Luis Saez waiting for a call, watching those videos. Good morning. There we go. Dave Grenig.
How are you?
Hey, good. I hate that we have to spend whatever percentage of time we will on this, but it's the reality. It's the task at hand. I mean, it was such a great weekend, despite the weather woes. Two great days of racing, and then 22 minutes of tension that you could cut with a knife, and a result that will be talked about for years.
Yeah, you know, and I think I heard you say something with Louis standing there watching him as the clock continued to run there, and you knew with each minute going by, at least I felt that each minute going by was looking worse and worse for that horse to stay up, and obviously it came down. I don't know why it took 22 minutes, but it did, and you know, you just felt bad for, you know, he's got a gaggle of cameras around him, both, you know, for television and for, you know, the photographers. And he's just getting more, antsy about what's going to happen. And I think he realizes that it's going to not go his way. And then when it didn't, you know, he just, you know, all the cameras left. And I'm walking back with him a little bit. And, you know, I could see him kind of wipe a tear from his eye, just, you know, the disappointment being from going. I mean, it is truly the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat right there, all wrapped up in 22 minutes.
Dave, your thoughts overall on what was transpiring, your thoughts as you watched the race live, and then subsequently as it became clear that, you know, there was going to be some kind of an investigation, and even though the inquiry light didn't go up, it the objection filed pretty quickly. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer, but I was in a different area and you know, didn't get down to what became a mob scene, trackside. Your thoughts as it unfolded?
Well, I watched the race in the paddock, on that big screen in the paddock, and I think I was near Baffert, in between Baffert and Pletcher there watching the race. It's just, the reason I do that is because we have to track these people down after the race, and you know, to watch it somewhere else, you just need quick access to, you know, if Baffert wins it, he's right there. If you know, if not, you can go through the tunnel and get what you need. I did not see it when it actually happened live. I was actually starting, my piece was actually going to be exclusively on Luis Diaz winning his Derby, and I'm, you know, trying to talk to jocks about, you know, some of his friends about what it meant for Louis to win. And then when I finally make my way out there and I see that there's an objection, and but it says it's only the objection was lodged by Pratt. Okay, so that's all we know at first, is that it's the runner-up. And I'm thinking, and when I'm watching the video of this that the first showed, it's like, what's he objecting for? Nothing happened. I didn't see anything happen to him. And then when they back it up, you do see something. But I'm like, sure, okay, so who did he bother? And then where did that horse finish? And it's like, okay, he bothered War of Will. I could tell that. It was just a little difficult to see why was Pratt objecting and why there was no other objection. And like you said, why was there no inquiry? What are the stewards doing? Why was there no inquiry? And I just thought, initially, I thought, well, this will be dismissed because Pratt had a clear run. And then as it got longer, then I'm starting to see on the board what they're showing. I'm like, oh, okay, this doesn't look too good. But then I'm watching War of Will. I'm like, he's continuing on. You know, he didn't really, I didn't necessarily think he was done racing. And he kept coming on, and then he flattened out the last 16th or so. And then the other horses that are, alleged to have had been bothered, Long Range Toddy and Bodie Express, I thought that they were done at that point in time. I didn't think they were moving forward like they were going to be a factor in the race. So when I take all that into consideration, and I consider that it's the Kentucky Derby, and I consider that War of Will, you know, ran on until about the 16th when he probably, you know, hit the wall from a distance standpoint, I thought, I think I would have left it alone. That's just my point of view.
I'm in a similar place, and was immediately, and I, you know, even with subsequent views and angles, in fact, this morning I found the sort of high angle corner view from NBC, and it's even more apparent that is it a letter of the law infraction? I guess. Did it affect the outcome? Not really, but it's not it's not going to change. And you know, the dissatisfaction, obviously, and the unhappiness involved with, you know, particularly with Gary West, the article yesterday in TDN, you know, West telling Ben Glass, his managing director of his racing operations, that he's ready to leave the game, and that would be, you know, that would be really just unfortunate. I mean, he's been working toward this for decades to try to get a Derby winner. And
I think that's a heat of the moment thing. I'd be, the only thing that would be more stunning than him getting out of the game would be if they actually overturned this call. So, I just don't think that. There's a lot of disappointment there, and I get it. I mean, they could ask these guys, Jason Service and Louis Saez and Gary West, did you ever win the Kentucky Derby? I said, yes, for 22 minutes I was the winner of the Kentucky Derby, and then I got disqualified. And I get the bitter disappointment, and I do feel for them, but I'd be stunned if he just said, okay, I'm leaving the game. Now, after the whole incident, this is where I thought it really got poorly handled by stewards or whoever, is we're only told at the time that Flavian Pratt alleged, claimed foul. It wasn't until almost 2 hours later, I believe, that we actually learned that it was John Court on Long Range Toddy also claimed foul. So that would have been good to know early. Why would they did not light the inquiry sign? No idea. And then to take 2 hours to actually read a statement and not take questions, I thought was just mind-boggling to me. And I understand this litigation. You could have taken a few questions, and if you thought they were legal issues that you couldn't answer, then you can say, I don't want to answer that question. But to just get up there, read a statement, and then walk away, I thought was just, it's a bad look, bad optic for the game. And apparently, via John Service, Gary West asked the stewards to, I'm sorry, Jason Service, he asked the stewards to look at the videos before the end of the day, and they said, no, come back Thursday. Sort of like the Wizard of Oz saying, Dorothy, you come back when you get the wiki. I don't understand why you wouldn't do that. Let them look at the video, explain it. And maybe if you explained it that way and Gary West said, you know what, I didn't see that. You're right. It's over. We're not talking about it anymore. And I know people, there's some people are like, wow, we're getting all this publicity. I'm like, yeah, really? You like all this publicity, huh? Because I do not subscribe to the theory that bad, you know, no publicity is bad. So I don't necessarily think you can just sort of get, you know, the only reason they're talking about the Kentucky Derby is not for positive news, it's for negative.
Well, that's funny you bring that up, and the expectation, although it appears that we're not going to see maximum security in Baltimore, but you had the best viewership of Derby on television since 92, and if you connect the dots, people could probably figure out why, which is very strange, frankly, but that's okay. Eyes on the game is a positive. Dave, one of the things about this that is, again, I keep using the word unsatisfying. You got to feel badly. At the same time, you're happy for Bill Mott, but you feel badly too that he can't, you know, that he can't take this, you know, this opportunity and this win the way you'd want to see a Hall of Fame legend get his Derby, if you, I'm sure you know what I mean.
I agree with you, and I also just want to point out, I thought Bill Mott, I've seen some negative stuff written, you know, or on social media about it, and I just don't get it. I thought he's handled himself 1,000% as classy as a guy could handle what you're talking about. Like, he can't really enjoy it, but he's going to try, and he's not going to apologize for it, and nor should he. He had that horse ready to run, a peak effort. I mean, the bettors dismissed him at 65-1, but Bill always was confident in this horse, which is why he ran him back to get the points to get in, you know, to ran him in the Arkansas race to get him the points to get in, and he got in, and he proved Bill right. Whether he was second or, you know, first or whatever, he ran a dynamite race. And, you know, you go back to that Gulfstream Maiden race he won, people were talking about this horse big time when he overcame what he did, and then he just showed some immaturity in his couple other races, but Bill had faith in him, and he kept the faith, and he was rewarded for it in a big way. He shouldn't have to apologize for it, but yes, he will always have to explain, you know, my horse finished second, but there was a disqualification, but I did win the Kentucky Derby. But no, I'm glad he got his Derby. Yes, I wish it would have happened when his horse winning by two lengths, and you could celebrate him, and it could be more about him than more as you know than this, but you know. All class, Bill Mott, and totally not, you know, totally expected.
Well, and of course, let's also note that he's not retiring after the Triple Crown's over. There's a Bill.
Right. Right. Now, there could be another one out there for him. And
exactly. Dave, let's also touch on you know some of the races you covered personally for the paper and your overall impressions. What were you surprised with? I think everybody's agreeing that Master Fencer ran a tremendous race after being bet on as a, you know, either 18th or 19th. What struck you otherwise on the weekend and in the Derby and everything else?
Yeah. I thought Master Fencer ran a very solid race, and he'll be a serious player in the Belmont. I think he's shipping here on Wednesday. Game Winner ran a mile and three. Great Game Winner, I already have him pegged in for the Breeders' Cup Marathon. He ran a mile and three quarters, I think, in the Derby. It'd be nice if he could run a race where he could save a little bit of ground. I thought he ran well to be where he finished because he was just parked outside seemingly the whole way. And, you know, Code of Honor, I thought was, you know, as the week went on, I thought Code of Honor was going to run a good race, and he did. I think he was moving up. He moved up in the slop a bit, but, you know, with each passing morning, I thought he was, there were sort of two horses I thought people were sort of gravitating to based on how they were training. One was By My Standard, and the other one I thought was Code of Honor. By My Standard got crushed out of the gate, and, you know, obviously compromised him, but I thought Code of Honor ran, you know, a solid race. Outside of that, with all due respect to Roy H., I think Batoli might be the best sprinter in the country. He stepped up in a big way in that race in the Churchill Downs. So he'd always run at Oak Lawn and just three quarters, and I didn't think he met a field. I know he ran against Whitmore last time, but, Whitmore had, in the count lead, but Whitmore had to go out of his game. I thought this race was going to set up perfectly for Whitmore, and Mattioli just, he was just awesome, I thought. And Asphyxian had a huge weekend. She's a Julie, getting a grade one victory. Just, he had a terrific weekend. And, I know Chad Brown didn't have anything in the Derby, but boy, this turf arsenal, Bricks and Mortar, how cool a horse is Bricks and Mortar?
Yep.
Just to get up there. And I know, Digital Age took the back road to that race with Tampa, a couple races in Tampa, but, what an effort he put in as well. So, I think we have some promising horses to get excited about. I know that we're only going to talk about this for the next however long it takes. I'm looking forward to in 5 weeks from now, the Belmont card, because I think you're going to see a lot of those horses show up here. And, hopefully we get a day like we have today and not a day like they had on the weekend at Belmont.
Exactly.
Things to look forward to there.
Well, we're looking forward to talking to Tom Amos, who's listening in now, Dave, so you can say all kinds of wonderful things about Serengeti Empress.
You know what? I'm sorry. I am remiss for not congratulating Tom for winning the Oaks. And there's another guy like Mott who had faith in his horse, faith in his own convictions about how she was doing, and put her in the race and got rewarded for it. He's got a terrific filly in Serengeti, and and kudos to Tom for going on with it, and kudos for the transparency that he showed in the weeks leading up to the race. Putting the horse's training on video, and because I know there's a lot of people that are concerned. Oh, she bled last time. You know what? Horses bleed through Lasix occasionally, and if you can get the horse right, and he if the horse is right in its training, and he had the horse spot on, and kudos to him, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I should have said that. It was a terrific performance, he should feel real proud of the job that he did getting that horse to that race and the performance that she put in.
Dave Grenig, DRF Grenig on Twitter, everybody, and another Derby in the books. We won't see you in Baltimore. Your daughter is at Westbury Music Fair, right, this weekend?
Is that Calhoun High School, the frat home of Gary Contessa and the people who invented Ben and Jerry? That's about their loan. But yes, she's in a play, and unfortunately, I will be missing your speech on your well-deserved Old Hilltop Award. Congratulations to you on that. Hopefully, someone will tape that and put that on Twitter, and I can watch that. I'd say 5 minutes, Matt.
Guaranteed. I already kidded with Andy Serling that the one thing we know is I'll be shorter than E-Hall.
No comment.
Dave Grenig, everybody. Dave, thanks a lot. Great work.
Talk to you later.
Grenig's the best. We're staying right here. There's just too much, and we look forward to this. I think that those that were listening last week, one of the reasons we spend 2 weeks in Kentucky is because there's just too much. There's Derby, and then there's Oaks, and then there's the other 11 graded stakes and just everything that comes with it. And you heard from Tom Amos after Serengeti Empress turned in the work that not only gave her the green light to participate, but also stamped her right back into contention, which she was carrying through the winter at Fairgrounds. And Tom Amos joins us, and the emotion for him and Joel Politti and everybody involved in the Oaks win, Jose Ortiz obviously as well, really special on Friday. Tom, congratulations once again.
Thank you, Steve. It's been one heck of a couple of days, and quite frankly, before the race, one heck of a few weeks of a lot of emotions. But in the end, it's, as I said after the race, it's a very, very sweet victory.
You talked about your own career and getting a win like this. That, to me, is what's special in a lot of ways. Bill Mott getting a Derby, not that it's different, but it's a goal, and there's milestones in horsemen's careers. Talk about, you know, getting to this place, to be in the opportunity to win a race like a Kentucky Oaks, and you could tell that that was really being carried by you into Friday and then, you know, for the immediate aftermath after the win.
Yeah, I mean, so look, I won my first race as a trainer in 1987, and I'm 57 years old now, and what occurred on Friday, watching it unfold, particularly the last 100 yards of the race where my filly engaged an opponent and then drew off at the end. It was something that I had so many different emotions going through me. But the most overwhelming emotion was my parents, who are 93 and 94 years old and too old to travel to come up for the race. And I know they were watching back home in Mississippi. And they live there, and that little small fishing town on the coast called Pass Christian is where I spent a lot of my youth and where I fell in love with horses and had a horse that I kept over there. And, you know, they knew nothing about racing while I was growing up. They knew I had a passion for it from a very young age, but they knew nothing else about racing. And I'm blessed to have parents that supported all of us, their six boys in my family, supported all of us in our decisions to do what we wanted to do. And I thought a lot about them, and I couldn't wait to talk to them that evening. My old bosses, many who taught me along the way, and all the people that supported me as a trainer, as well as people that worked for me, those things were flashing through my head so fast. After the race, Steve, you talked to me a lot. I'm going to tell you something you probably won't believe, but I was at a loss for words. I just didn't know how to react to it.
Well, it was not just a remarkable, confident handling of a horse, but also a performance that is amazing when we think about the discussion going into it. We looked at that field, Tom, and there was nothing but speed. And it's funny because I was with Ian Wilkes. I can't remember if it was a Thursday night. It might have been Thursday night, and a Thursday or Wednesday night. And Ian said, you know what though? When there's a lot of speed, sometimes the gates open and they all look at each other. He says, I hope that doesn't happen. But that's not really what happened. I mean, you took control. They went fast enough for the half, and she just, you know, she just kept going. You could see everybody else was being asked.
Oh, yeah. I mean, down the back, well, look, as the race unfolded, the very first thing that happened was one of the horses clipped heels, another horse and fell. Fortunately, the in-house television stayed on the field long enough that I could see that she got up and was okay and the rider had gotten up. Because when that initially happened right out of the gate, I was like, oh, my God, no. By the time I turned my attention back to my horse, who was breaking from the outside post 13, I could see that it looked like I was going to make the lead into the turn. And that's where the race was won, right there. You know, the run to the first turn and being able to get over and save ground and clearing the group. And you know, once they went down the backside, my wife turned to me and she saw the opening half mile time of 46 and change, and she said, that's too fast. And my older daughter, Ashley, was next to her, as well as my other daughter, Haley. And I didn't even turn away from the TV. I just kept looking at the TV, so I didn't see their reaction when she said that. But I said, not for her, it's not. And I learned later that my two kids went from this terrible feeling of she's doing too much on the front end to having confidence in her, as I did. And I said in the post-race interview that in any horse race, the ears tell the tale. And her ears were going back and forth and waiting for a command from Jose. And when you see something like that, it's a wonderful feeling to know that you've got more in the tank. So she was clear of the group. Her ears were going back and forth. And I felt very good at that point. I had a moment at the eighth pole where I thought we might get caught. But she literally caught that other filly out of the corner of her eye, Wayne Catalano's filly. And when she saw her, she took off again and distanced herself from her. So, you probably either saw it or heard it, but I turned around to the group, which is fairly sizable. I had a lot of family and friends there. And as I went to cheer, I lost my balance, and I fell into them, and it was a mosh pit in the middle of the clubhouse on the third floor at Churchill Downs. But it was sure a lot of fun.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of the aspects of the race, and of course, positive spirit. Of course, we had talked to Rudy Brissett about several weeks ago after Quip had won, and luckily she tumbles. Manny Franco, pops up unharmed. The filly got up. We should mention the two outriders, and I'm not sure. I didn't really notice who it was, but. Very frequently you hear horsemen around Churchill cite just what a tremendous outrider staff that is on hand, and they went and gathered her up, which was, kind of a sidebar to things that people might not have noticed, but that ended up okay. And, of course, Jaywalk ends up disqualified. Not a great weekend for the Service Brothers. John DQ'd on Friday and Jason on Saturday, but you mentioned Leora, and during the post parade, Tom, and I had been at the Risen Star, it was noticeable how much Leora has changed even in 2 months, and the way she rated as well, to then come at you late in the race. I mean, she ran a tremendous second in here, and once again, the Fairgrounds fillies re-exert this authority that they've had historically over this race.
Yeah, so you're touching on two things there. First of all, the first thing, which concerns the outriders. I saw them this morning. I made a special trip to where they were standing on the racetrack, and I thanked them for saving the day. And they did. If that horse is loose on the track, who knows, how the race turns out. But they did their job, and they did it well. And, they're like umpires in baseball. The less you hear about them, the better job they're doing. But it didn't go unnoticed by me. And I thought they did a superb job of saving the day. And that's what they did. They saved the day. Speaking of Leora and Fairgrounds horses, if you're a trip handicapper, which I am, and you watched the Fairgrounds Oaks, the race unfolded where Serengeti Empress made the lead, but it became evident with 3/8 of a mile to go that something wasn't right, and she started to fade. And Leora took over the race at that point with 3/8 of a mile to go. I had left the TV to go outside to see if my filly was okay because I didn't know what had happened, and was amazed when the board numbers came up and Leora didn't win. She ran second. And I was like, how could that be? She passed me with so much horse. It wasn't until after I watched the replay that I recognized that Leora rode the race to beat Serengeti Empress, which is logical. Serengeti Empress was 2-5 that day. But in doing so, she moved way too soon. And I had a strong feeling that on Friday she was going to turn in a stellar performance, and I think we saw two fillies do that, Leora and, of course, Serengeti Empress.
No doubt. Lady Apple third in here, basically kind of just established position and chased all the way. Champagne Anyone trailed early, was probably a little too far back, and rallied later on. Bellafina, after all the speculation all week long that she just looked blah coming up to the race, I mean, she ran okay. She just kind of went around and ended up fifth in here, and they'll regroup. But otherwise, an Oaks that goes to the hometown. You know, years ago, Tom, they used to call Oaks Day Louisville's Day at the Races, and that keeps getting pushed further back. But it was, in fact, pretty much a day at the races for the locals, including for the win from Break Even in that Eight Bells that started all the stake action. Just thinking about this now, and of course Richard Klein and his family, his parents, this is a complete homebred, the Stallion Country Day, and the female family, it really was kind of a locals day on Friday.
It was. The local day has now become something known as Thurby, which is the Thursday before Derby.
Yeah.
So it's changed a little bit. Steve, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you a little bit about how the month of April went for me as far as Serengeti Empress is concerned.
Sure.
We got up here early April, and there was no decision on whether or not we were going to run the Oaks, as you know from our previous conversation, after she had a very nice work here. And I was getting so much grief on social media, and I've been told, don't pay attention to that stuff, but a lot of people, because she was vanned off and got a courtesy ride home after the Fairgrounds Oaks, thought she was hurt. And by the time I got up here, I had made a decision that I was not going to run her in the Kentucky Oaks. But I had not done any video of her on the racetrack, and I was concerned that people would think that I was hiding something about her health. So I took her to the track one last time here, and I told my exercise rider, just back her up, you know, 200 yards, and gallop her by me 200 yards, and I get some footage of her to show that she's moving well. But put her on social media, and we're just going to say we're going to wait for a different race. So nobody speculates about her, and they'll see that she's moving well. So I gave those instructions to my exercise rider, and he did just as I said. He went by me, and I took the video of her. And I had some other horses on the track. We do it by sets. So I had a set of four on the track, and after she went by me, I was waiting for the other three to see how they were moving. And my exercise rider misunderstood my instructions, and he came by me a second time, meaning instead of going that little brief gallop, he came by me after going another mile. And as he went by me, Serengeti Empress, as she always does, had that fluid ballerina look, ears twitching back and forth, and a very, very strong hold the rider was having against her. Not an uncomfortable hold, but one where she was obviously enjoying what she was doing out there. And when I saw it, I went back to the barn and I changed my mind. And I said, you know what, we're going to take this day by day. I'm not going to quit yet with her. And everything fell into place after that. From the very first work that we gave her and scoped her afterwards to make sure she didn't bleed, to the work that said she's ready to run and she's back. And look, Steve, you and I talk a lot. You know I tell it like it is. That conversation we had that day after that work that she put in, which was all over social media, it was a sign. It was a sign that she was ready. And when I was tacking her up for the Kentucky Oaks, you were right there in the infield. You got a great look at her. And I'll just say this. There were a lot of nice-looking fillies in that paddock that day, but none looked better than Serengeti Empress. She looked great. And for a handicapper, what more do you need to go to the window?
Well, they're rewarded, those that stuck with her, $28 on the mutual front, and she's basically created an unusual record, actually. 8 starts, 5 wins, no seconds or thirds. The other 3 efforts, you put lines through them, basically. You know, of course, the bleeding out of the Oaks and the juvenile fillies, where, you know, she chased and you know, got overwhelmed, and then back to the Schuylerville, which I, you know, kind of forgotten about, in her second start, where she, you know, she was challenged right away, and why not at that time of year. But this one, Tom, absolutely gets put on the shelf as an incredible training job. And, you know, I called it, you know, fearless on Friday afternoon, that the way you approach this, because you really were. I mean, you weren't afraid of the criticism. You weren't afraid of, you know, you got people, you got pearl clutchers. Oh, she should be retired, which, of course, you know, based on this LASIK, on the LASIK situation, I suppose 2 years from now, she would have to be retired.
Yeah, look, that's a topic for another day, and it's a legitimate question. But fearless, I would say that month of April, I may have looked fearless on the outside, but I didn't sleep well at all during April. I just worried that I would, you know, we did all we could to make sure nothing wrong would happen in the Oaks, but you can't simulate a race. And I had a lot of conversations with the man upstairs, and I just said, just let her be safe. You know, don't let this decision be something that causes a problem for anyone. And I remember Wednesday afternoon, I came home from work, and the race was 2 days later, and I looked at my wife, and I said, I'm just ready for this to get over. So, yeah, on the outside, I was fearless, but not so on the inside.
Well, they say that about ducks. It looks placid up on top, but under the water, those legs are churning away. You know, I hope this doesn't mean that we can't ever talk about Heritage of Gold anymore.
You know, look, you got to dig deep in my resume to look at the great ones I have. So, look, make no mistake about it. I'm a bit player, you know, but I got to have the stage, and so did our stable, and most importantly, so did our great athlete. I got to have the stage, we all did, on Friday. And what really was fun was in the last four or five years or so, I've, you know, made a concerted effort to participate in the Keeneland yearling sales. You know, before that, I would get one or two horses every year. I have a label as being a very good claiming trainer, and I'm proud of that. But I would like to have been called something other than that. And, you know, I bought her at the sale. I found her. I paid $70,000 for her, which is not a lot by the standards of what the prices were at the sale that day at Keeneland. So I've been a part of her life since they dropped the hammer on her back in September of a yearling year. And to develop her into this and have her win the Kentucky Oaks was so exciting for me. But in the end, sometimes we forget the most important ingredient in it all is the athlete herself, and she is a great athlete.
The other element I want to slip in here, too, because the family was such a beautiful scene, Joel Politti, and talk about Joel and you know, what a partner he's been in this as your, you know, as the owner. And we heard the naming story that ties in Africa by Toto, and you know, there was really a lot to smile about with that scene between the Politis and the Amoses and everybody that joined in. Of course, Jose Ortiz a lot to like about this this result on Friday.
Very, very lucky to train for Joel Politti, who is an orthopedic surgeon, very, very mild-mannered, doesn't ever look for the spotlight in any way, shape, or form. I mean, he's a doctor that's an inventor of many of the things they use in surgery now, so his resume away from the racetrack is really, really spectacular. But what a lot of people don't know about him is that he's the son of an immigrant that came over here to the United States, and they loved horses and would spend, at a young age, he spent a lot of time at Waterford Park, the tracks that were close to where they lived, and they had horses. They kept them in their backyard. Joel worked with horses at a very young age. So, he's an owner, sure. He's a horseman, too, and he's also my friend, so I'm glad to have that family in my life.
Tom Amos, before we go, it would be silly of me not to let you, you know, put on the TVG set and let you comment on Saturday's situation.
Yeah. So there's so many moving parts to that situation that continue to come. So it's a fluid situation, believe it or not, even though the horse disqualification is over and done with. So I would say a few things. Number one, I'm really surprised that there was only an objection filed and that the stewards didn't hang the inquiry sign up. The difference between those two things is that an objection is a rider claiming foul against another rider. An inquiry is the stewards saying, we need to look at this race. Now, the stewards wouldn't be saying, if they put the inquiry sign on, that a horse has to come down. What they're saying is, something happened and we need to look at it. And it was a big surprise to me that that inquiry sign never went up. And I think part of the reason for that is typically the Derby is a very rough run race. Think about it in terms of watching a basketball game in the NBA and the commentators say, oh, they're letting them play. You know, well, in the Derby, traditionally, they let them play. And in this year's Derby, just like every other, you know, that was going on to some extent. And the foul itself, 100% agree with the takedown. I mean, I do not think, well, I know it wasn't Louis Size's fault. I mean, that horse made an abrupt move and moved over two or three paths. He corrected him immediately, but the damage was done. And it's tragic to those connections, but it's a foul, plain and simple, and it's a takedown, plain and simple. I mean, since that's happened, I've heard people say that the results should stand, but Louis Size should get dazed and fined. I mean, those thoughts are crazy. They don't make any sense to me. And I know that the West appeared on the Today Show this morning, and he's a really great man. I like him a lot, and I can't imagine the pain he must be having about feeling like he'd won the Derby and it all of a sudden changing. And I hope that as time goes on, some of the things that he said will be reconsidered. I know one of the things, he said that Churchill Downs was greedy running 20 horses in this race, and he said, look, they only run 14 in the Oaks. Why are they running 20 in the Derby except they're greedy and they want more betting money for the race? Well, let's not forget, the Kentucky Derby is 220 yards longer than the Kentucky Oaks, and that means another 220 yards of positioning before you go to the first turn, as compared to the 14-horse field of Kentucky Oaks. So I don't agree with that statement, and I hope he thinks about that again. But the other thing he said, which was quite a shock to me, was that he asked to speak to the stewards after the race, and they declined. And I really don't understand that. You know, this was a life-changing event for his horse and for them as owners, and the stewards should have welcomed a conversation with Mary and Gary West, and explain their decision, and maybe that would have saved a lot of the comments that were made today on the Today Show if they had. Instead, you know, we get a situation where one of the stewards stands up and reads a letter, a press release, explaining their decision with no questions afterwards, and if you watched it, I mean, it literally looked like a kidnap victim reading a ransom note. I mean, it's just like... Are you kidding? You know, I mean, in the world of transparency, and believe me, Steve, that's where we're headed. You know, in the world of transparency, none of that stuff makes sense to me. And so you've got a lot of people out there on both sides of this argument, and that's a surprise to me, number one, because as someone who watches races and feels like he knows what he's looking at, I don't understand the debate, but a lot of it could have been saved if the stewards had stepped up. And I'm sure, look, it's not just their decision, so I'm not pointing at that. Look, they were in a horrible position. I understand that. But the track and Churchill Downs, Inc., which I'm sure was involved in the decision of just writing a press release and not allowing any questions and not speaking to Mary and Gary West, that was a mistake, a really bad mistake, in my opinion.
Well, and there's... You know, there's going to be the life of 10 situation is going to be brought up here, undoubtedly. Actually, I don't know if I've seen that yet, but the stewarding examination is a you know, is a second tier discussion. But I agree that it really would have been so much better, and especially in light, Jason Service, who is not particularly communicative, he stood and answered everything that he was being asked, and you know, tried to, and so did Bill Mott, from every, you know, from every indication. And I think as a, you know, as an industry practice, and I suppose, you know, I suppose that the ROPE, the Racing Officials Accreditation Program, we could, you know, visit that, you know, later this week. But a policy, and I suppose, again, it's state by state, and some venues have different, you know, different rules governing who is in the stand. You know, New York, there's one from the racing board, there's one from the jockey club, and there's one from NYRA. You know, every place is different. Some are all, you know, three appointees of the, you know, the governing body in a state. But you know, you set the example with your handling of Serengeti Empress, so that everybody, you know, sees exactly what's happening and the decision making process. And it would benefit, you know, we do get to see you know, the way some of these things are handled. You know, the videos you see from Dubai, for instance, where the camera is right there in the stand, which is very interesting. And when there's issues and incidents, it's kind of interesting to watch. You know, some people also, Tom, are saying, you know, let's stop talking to jockeys. What's the jockey going to say that's going to influence or add anything to, you know, to the steward's understanding? If you can't tell what happened and judge it from, you know, what you saw, you don't need to hear from the riders. It should be evident. You should be accomplished enough in your position to, you know, interpret it. That's what you're in the stand for. So there's a lot. I did hear Rick Hammerly sent me a very interesting note. People asking about the 22 minutes. Hammer says that part of that is so that the mutual department has time to make sure they have the right response to a change. And so for those wondering why, oh, it took 22 minutes, it shouldn't take that long. Well, part of that could be the mutuals, until the mutual department says, all right, we've got our ducks in a row. So there's a piece of that. But as you said, Tom, there's a lot of moving parts to this, and all that counts is that everybody learn from it, and that, you know, we do better next time, as they say.
Yeah, I think that's well put. And if I sound like I'm blasting the stewards, quite the contrary, they made a tough decision to take down one of the co-favorites in the Kentucky Derby. They knew no one would, it wouldn't be a unanimous thing amongst the public, and they were put in a very, very tough spot. I understand that. So I don't envy them in the job that they had to do on Friday, but in my opinion, they did the right thing.
Tom Amos, everybody, and again, congratulations. Where is she turning up next, do you think?
Oh, we might see her at Belmont. We might see her at Belmont.
Acorn.
You took the words out of my mouth. But, yeah, that might be what we're doing.
Well, next time on, we'll have Africa to play. We'll play some Toto for you next time on. If she wins the Eclipse Award, that's what they're gonna have to play as you come on the stage.
I love it, Steve. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Very happy for you, Tom Amos, everybody, and you can follow Tom on Twitter at Tom Amos Racing, and affable and smart and thoughtful, and a great job. We're almost 20 minutes into hour two already, but this will be the first half, basically, of the show. And when we come back, Johnny D. And certainly we've had these conversations with Johnny, and we're going to, you know, everybody's going to get their input here. And it's clear already, well, we've had three visitors, Amos, Beyer, and Grenig, and, you know, slight differences of, you know, the way everybody has seen this. Johnny D next, Rusty Arnold and Brett Calhoun, and then Rich Migliori and Tony Black are going to tell you what it's like to be jostled around in the Derby. At the races, almost the second half. When we come back, Express Bets, Johnny D. Stay with us.